Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 12th of January, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start our wrap-up of what's been going on this week around the nation and around the world with several stories just to kind of lay things out for us that you're probably not going to hear on the Waystream Fake News. And as I go through them, you'll probably know why. Like this one, courtesy of Mike Adams of Natural News, about Dr. Martin Gore, a widely celebrated cancer doctor credited with saving thousands of lives, who died almost immediately after receiving a vaccine shot yesterday from total organ failure. Dr. Gore was a professor of cancer medicine at the Institute of Cancer Research, based in London, and he died suddenly, said the Times, after a routine inoculation for yellow fever. That paper at least does admit, quote, his death highlights the increased risks associated with the vaccine for the growing number of older travelers visiting exotic destinations. It also highlights, notes Mike Adams, the horrific price of believing in big pharma, chemotherapy, and vaccines. And the interesting thing is that so far the U.S. media has completely blacked out the story in what Adams calls yet another effort to silence any truth about the deadly risks, even dangers, associated with vaccines. Not one single establishment news outlet in the United States, he continues, has accurately reported on this vaccine-induced sudden death of a cancer doctor. Story number two, from The Hill and an independent San Diego television station, KUSI News, which said on Thursday that CNN, the criminally negligent network, had asked for a local view from a local TV station and then, quote, declined to hear from us after past reports from that same station showed that a border wall was, drumroll please, actually effective. Immigration, the partial government shutdown, and President Trump's proposed border wall have all been topics dominating the cable news landscape since the partial government shutdown began 3 weeks ago. And on Thursday morning, CNN called the KUSI newsroom asking if one of their reporters could give them that local view of the debate surrounding the border wall and the government shutdown, as KUSI reports. They've been airing in the San Diego area, by the way, since 1982. And they offered their own Dan Plant, who's reported dozens of times on the border, including a 2016 story that was retweeted by former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich and posted on DrudgeReport.com. Well, right there, folks, you're kind of getting a clue as to why CNN might have balked. We believe, they say, that CNN declined a report from KUSI because we informed them that most Border Patrol agents we've spoken to told us the barrier does, in fact, work. Quote, we've continuously been told by Border Patrol agents that the barrier along the southern border helps prevent illegal entries, drugs, and weapons from entering the United States, and the numbers prove it. Unquote. And evidently, you're not going to hear that from CNN. On to that partial government shutdown that today ties the record. Hopefully this is one we can beat, because there are quite a few bright spots out there associated with people beginning to figure out what's really essential and what's, well, to put it mildly, not. I'm looking at a piece from Ryan McMakin, among others, at the Activist Post, telling us why it is that the government shutdown is exposing things most of Big Brother's useless employees would just as soon you didn't know, including, perhaps especially, the transportation sexual abusers, who are facing a no-show problem with employees as paychecks are put on hold during the partial government shutdown, leading to longer lines and, at least allegedly, security problems at airports nationwide. Now remember, folks, they've never caught a terrorist, and there's no indication that anything they've ever done, as a matter of fact, actually makes people safer as opposed to just more conditioned to having their once constitutionally protected rights violated. Anyway, they actually quote CNN, and I wonder if you could really believe them, but it says this, hundreds of TSA officers who are required to work without paychecks through this partial government shutdown have called out from work this week from at least four major airports. Meanwhile, TSA insists that everything is just completely normal, even though absenteeism has gone up by, quote, 200 to 300%, according to MarketWatch. Not everyone, though, was as sanguine about the situation as the Big Brother officials. One frequent traveler complained lines were exceptionally longer than normal, and others are asking questions like, Given that the feds admit more and more TSA employees are skipping work, it's hard to believe everything's humming along normally, unless maybe they're simply allowing to happen what they've allowed to happen so many times before. Just kind of pretend that they're doing things that they didn't really need to do to begin with in order to get the lines moving. Well, of course, that's something that the feds insist they would never, ever do. And that's really the good news here. Even though the press isn't anxious to talk about the truth, this is one really obvious unconstitutional three-letter agency all of us would be better off without. You probably won't hear that, but the good news with the shutdown is more and more Americans are figuring it out. Oh, and are you ready for this, folks? I looked up the numbers. TSA wastes $7.5+ billion annually, not counting the indirect costs of all the nasty stuff they do to people. Can you think of a better way to spend that? Like maybe a wall and a half? Yep, get rid of the transportation sexual abusers, build the equivalent of Trump's wall every single year, and maybe the extra couple billion dollars would go a long way towards repairing some of the rest of the Bill of Rights. Hey, maybe the BATF will be next. Could there be even more stories that the Waste Stream really doesn't want you to know about on any given Friday? Well, here's a big one. Natural News calls it a bombshell. Truthfully, we've reported on it before, but now there's at least a second witness. The more you learn about Spygate, begins J.D. Hayes, the Obama-era op launched by the deep state to trip up the new POTUS, Donald Trump, and then undermine the administration since they weren't able to prevent him from actually winning, the more angry it should make you. Shocking new details revealed last week, we've talked about them for quite a while though, by a former law enforcement official named Roscoe B. Davis in a series of tweets that have also been backed up by previous reporting from Fox News, allegedly implicate the Clinton Foundation, who'd have thought it, as they raked in millions of dollars running guns and other weapons into, in this case, Libya. Basically, here's part of the story you probably remember. There once was a U.S. ambassador to Libya named Chris Stevens, who seems to have needed to be Arkansided because he knew about all of this, along with some U.S. servicemen and special forces types who were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Can't have Stevens turn in state's evidence now, can we? And here's the really interesting part. According to Davis's information, former National Security Advisor, a general you may have heard of, Michael Flynn, who once headed the Defense Intelligence Agency, was also allegedly targeted by the Hormeister's mentor, one of the most evil men in the swamp, Special Counsel Robert Mueller, because the deep state knows that he knows where the bodies are buried, literally all the details. Davis began his series of tweets noting that people were once again showing interest in the September 11th, 2012 attack on that U.S. embassy in Benghazi, Libya, where the ambassador and three others were killed. And the officer began by reminding readers that the Obama administration initially blew the attack off, remember this, as a random incident caused by an anti-Muslim video. Turns out that wasn't simply a huge whopper, but part of the much larger cover story and the tragedy. And as Davis notes, it was actually set in motion by Hillary Clinton's State Department and others within the so-called intelligence community months earlier. Now, this is a very long, complicated story with lots of information, lots of weaponry that Americans aren't allowed to have, lots of dead people, and a whole lot of cover-up. So I'm not going to rehash all of that. But, among other things, Davis recounted that on July 25th of 2012, Taliban fighters in Afghanistan targeted a U.S. Army CH-47 Chinook helicopter with a new generation Stinger missile. Guess who's the only country that manufactures those? Reports at the time, though, claimed the chopper was downed by a Russia-style RPG, but subsequent reporting by Kenneth Timmerman indicated, in fact, it was a new-generation U.S.-manufactured Stinger missile. The debris, later recovered, even included an actual serial number. And the question arises, how, oh how, did the Taliban manage to get their hands on these missiles? And if you know the rest of the story, folks, can you say State Department, Hitlery, and Obama regime cover-up? And now we know it wasn't just a dead ambassador that needed to be silenced. As Roscoe B. Davis put it, who was the director of the DIA at the time Benghazi went down, and who was warning HRC and the State Department and Leon Panetta that an attack was planned? General Michael Flynn. And now you know why they were so desperate to get Flynn out of the seat of National Security Advisor, because he knew the truth. And also, notes the story, that's why Obama tried to persuade POTUS Trump not to appoint Flynn as his NSA, and why, when Trump did it anyway, the deep state went after all of them. Well, we do have to at least recap the big brouhaha and, of course, associated cover-up for this week. The president's big speech Tuesday night about his plans for a border wall and his intention to go ahead and get it, even if the obstructors are dead set on a continuing invasion. The president's speech was reasonable, measured, certainly factual, in spite of what the waste stream is trying to claim. Nothing new there. But in general, it didn't say much of anything new to those who have been following all along. In particular, and most notably, in spite of all the pre-speech hype, he didn't come right out and threaten a state of national emergency to do the job and build the wall anyway. Arguably, he didn't have to. And we'll talk about all of that in a bit more detail later on. Meanwhile, the follow-up American Gothic-looking response from Tweedledee and Tweedledum was downright asinine. I might have been tempted to say it was laughable, but actually, after looking at the various reviews on the web this morning, I think the better term, certainly the most popular, was downright creepy. Almost to the point where if the president didn't make the case for a border wall effectively enough, the disreputable duo in opposition arguably did. The evil Chucky doll in particular never really addressed why it is that when he was for a border wall before, that was okay, but now that Trump's for it, suddenly he's not. But he's just fine with all the other leftists, like famously Bathhouse Barry, who have their own walls because, well, you know, invasions are for the little people. As I've already mentioned, most attention focused on the fact that Trump stopped short of calling for a national emergency that would allow him to bypass the obstructionist Congress and start construction immediately. Axios reported Wednesday morning that the national emergency route is still the most likely option for the president, citing one source close to him. And furthermore, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders confirmed during an interview with Fox Business that a national emergency declaration remains at least an option for building that wall. Mike Adams at Natural News is among quite a few, including your host, who've pointed out that the president already has a declaration of national emergency in place, actually quite a few, thanks to unscrupulous presidents before him. And yes, given that they involve the extensive takings of private property, far in excess of anything the current president has even remotely proposed, they're utterly unconstitutional. But the same press that's now squealing like stuck pigs hasn't bothered to even mention that for decades. As a matter of fact, you know this, if you even point out that these things exist, any number of PDDs or presidential decision directives, executive orders, and the like, they'll probably call you a conspiracy theorist. Mike Adams put it this way. President Trump is already technically operating within a declaration of national emergency. Accordingly, while he may not have used the phrase national emergency last night, that designation has already been invoked and is still in place. The declaration grants the president, it just wasn't supposed to be this guy, remember, broad emergency powers, many of which were not only established but expanded by the former occupant of the White House, Bathhouse Barry. And as reported by Natural News all the way back in 2012, Barack Obama has already declared the president's power to seize any and all national resources in times of emergency. The one dated March 16th of 2012, entitled National Defense Resources Preparedness, claims that the president alone has the authority, whether the Constitution says so or not, to take over all resources in the nation. Everything you can think of, folks, labor, food, industry, you name it, as long as it's done to, quote, promote the national defense. A phrase so vague, as almost anybody will note, that it could mean practically anything. Well, except perhaps actually defending the nation's borders. And by that executive order, the president claimed the power to seize all forms of communication, production, natural resources, transportation, energy, and just about anything else you can name. It was invoked by Bathhouse Barry with a plan to hand that power over, of course, to the designated dictator in waiting, President Hitlery, who would certainly then have invoked those emergency powers without anywhere close to the squawking we're hearing now about a mere wall to declare a national emergency over things like gun violence, followed, of course, by the inevitable intended gun confiscation as well as mass arrests of conservative journalists. And failing that, they're still having to use Twitter, to Facebook, and Gulag to do their dirty work for them. Notably, observes Adams, Barack Obama declared that executive order as, quote, Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States, unquote, even though we are not and have not been in a declared state of war for almost three-quarters of a century. Nevertheless, continues Adams, it set up the precedent for military action to address whatever national emergency was subsequently declared. But what Obama clearly didn't intend was that America would reject a Hillary-Clinton presidency and elect an anti-establishment, anti-deep state president who would prefer to protect America rather than gut it. You could almost say, make America great again. Thus, whether he likes it or not, all the executive powers and military precedent declared by Obama have now been inherited by President Trump, which certainly explains all the weeping and gnashing of teeth. Circling back to last night's address, notes the Zero Hedge summary, the New York Times reported that the president had initially dismissed the primetime speech as unlikely to work, but went ahead with it anyway at the behest of his advisors. In an off-the-record lunch with television anchors just hours before the address, he made it clear, somewhat bluntly, that he wasn't inclined to give the speech or go to Texas afterwards, but was talked into it by advisors. Quote, "It's not going to change a damn thing, but I'm still doing it," said Trump of the border visit, according to one of the people in the room. But he added, gesturing at his communications aides, Bill Shine, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Kellyanne Conway, "These people behind you say it's worth it." So Trump is preparing to embark on a trip to Texas on Thursday, where he'll visit the border, potentially offering yet another opportunity for the president to make a wall-related revelation. As we transition next to the other news today, I want to throw out a couple of other facts that might otherwise get overlooked in all the smokescreen. One of them comes courtesy of Information Liberation's Chris Menahan and, kind of, sorta, CBS, which deleted what they call a fact check of Trump's border wall speech Tuesday night, in which he claimed that the situation with migrant women being raped while attempting to illegally cross the southern border is bad. Truth is, it's even worse than he described. Here's how CBS originally put it. Fact check. The president claimed one in three women have been sexually assaulted traveling to cross the southern border. Oops, no, the president was wrong. The fact check says that 60 to 80% of all female migrants traveling across Mexico are being raped along the way. This estimate courtesy of Amnesty International. Oops, we can't have that up there, can we? And CBS quickly said, no, we won't, and deleted that little fact. And while a few snowflakes might accept an excuse like, well, they didn't really understand percentages anyway, they're hard, the more cynical among us, who've been paying attention to the fake news media anyway, would probably agree with Menahan. It seems that CBS News doesn't want their readers to know just how many women are actually raped by coyotes and smugglers while attempting to cross illegally into our country. And lest you think there's a political agenda at play here, which has nothing whatsoever to do with defending the nation against enemies foreign and domestic, there's this from the criminally negligent network and their so-called commentator, Joe Lockhart.
Justification for a national emergency has been built largely on the fact that terrorists have been pouring over the border, the southern border.
And then he went on to pontificate at some length about how that's just not true. Which is kind of tough if you don't know how many are pouring over the southern border, much less how many of that massive number are actual terrorists. But those kind of facts aren't going to make it past the CNN gatekeepers. Which is what this guy wanted anyway. He didn't think the president should be allowed to address the American people live, but instead, folks like him need to demand text of the speech beforehand to determine, quote, what's true and what's not. This, however, is the line that ought to be raising more than a few eyebrows. Perhaps that's why CNN seems to want to make sure it doesn't get replayed. Quote, "It's an absolute fiction that there's a national emergency here. We have national emergencies. Climate change is a national emergency. Gun violence is a national emergency. And that's all I can stand, folks." Oh, CNN is working really hard to turn those things into national emergencies. But they're whoppers, and of course they're the precise opposite of what the criminally negligent network is trying to claim. There is climate change, all right, so brace for solar cooling. And up until now, the worst gun violence has been precisely where it's been intended, in the gun-free killing zones. But if CNN gets their way, their intended civil war will dwarf all of that into insignificance. Which brings us now to that continuing war against those concepts that once formed the basis for the rule of law, ideas like self-evident truths, where our rights come from, and why you don't have any more, so far as the communists in Congress are concerned, and what they're going to do about it. Now let's recap it chronologically. Speaker of the Traitors, Nancy Pelosi, joined a coalition of the nation's leading anti-constitutional, anti-Second Amendment groups on Tuesday night to unveil their latest attempt to completely gut what's left of the Constitution and destroy the entire concept of private property. Yes, they intend to make gun control a leading issue in the coming Congress. Dianne Feinstein introduced an assault weapons ban later in the same week in the Senate, basically saying, hey, you people don't have the right to own anything. We don't want you to have. What else is new? Other than they're no longer hiding what they're intending. And as I've said over and over again, folks, if you intend to destroy the concept of private property, why not start with the single item of private property that was explicitly enumerated in the Constitution as shall not be infringed? Once that's done, the rest is easy. Said the Oathbreaker, second in line for the throne, today is a day of action. We say enough is enough by finally bringing common sense, bipartisan background check legislation to the floor of the House. The bill they unveiled is entitled the Bipartisan Background Check Act of 2019, which would outlaw private gun sales between anybody that doesn't have the approval of Big Brother's FBI. And basically, folks, if you think about that for just a second, it means there simply is no such thing as private property anymore, because we, your masters, will tell the slaves exactly what they must do with what they thought was theirs. And furthermore, this shouldn't surprise anybody who's been paying attention, Congress traitor Gabby Giffords is making clear that this latest infringement is only the, quote, first step in a larger push for gun control. Never mind, says Breitbart.com, that the man who shot her about 8 years ago did so with a handgun acquired via a background check. And it's obvious, continues A.W.R. Hawkins, that about the only thing she said that's true is that, clearly, they intend this to go a whole lot further, and this is only the first step in their eventual push, as we've seen in California, New Jersey, and lots of other examples, towards registration and then confiscation. Besides which, can you think of anything more inane, yeah, downright stupid, than requiring the FBI to perform a background check before formerly free people are allowed to do what they want with their property? Come on, who are we kidding here? The FBI vetted Strzok and Page. They suborned perjury and illegal wiretaps. They're about as non-political as Chuck E. Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. We shouldn't trust them to investigate treason, for crying out loud, much less give them more power to gang rape what's left of the Bill of Rights. If you really want common sense gun control, start by disarming the people who don't have the common sense to follow the law they took an oath to, not by giving them more power to continue the evil they've been getting away with. Hey, I've got an idea. Why don't Pelosi and Schumer just come right out and say what they plan to do? Let's have our own SS and be done with it. Well, let's wrap up the summary with some other big news events. One of America's oldest and once most famous retailers, Sears, is looking like it's headed for bankruptcy. California Pacific Gas and Electric, as Zero Hedge puts it, has been AIG'd. Their bonds have been downgraded to junk status, triggering an $800 million collateral call on what's being called a liquidity crisis, all as a result of their possible liability for the big fires in California. They've got plenty of company, of course. And can you say, how long are they going to last? And along those same lines, there's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's really, really sick, or worse, and who didn't show up to the Supreme Court for oral arguments this week. She's been kind of AWOL for quite a while anyway, and some of us don't think she's ever actually cracked open a copy of the Constitution. But the story is that the Trump White House, simply looking ahead, is quietly preparing the follow-up list of nominees for what may be his third Supreme Court pick. And yes, you can imagine a whole bunch of leftists will all over again be squealing like stuck pigs, especially if it looks like whoever he nominates, and some of us hope it'll be Amy Barrett, has actually read that Constitution and might even care about it. And that's getting to be a pretty rare thing in the District of Criminals. We'll be right back. back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Call, and I think it's important we start off this one with one of those metaphors for our time. Apropos for several reasons, including incredible but not unexpected hypocrisy.
And from where else? The very philosophical, if you could call it that, center of the left coast, Hollywood.
Where the Golden Globes were held Sunday evening and really set the tone for the week.
And the paragons of self-important virtue and wealth without limit also showed that their hypocrisy has no limit, too, because while there are many, many sanctuary cities in the People's Republic of California for illegal aliens, Hollywood evidently isn't one of them. Hollywood's a sanctuary city for those at the very much opposite end of the spectrum. And about the only thing that it seems to have in common with the other sanctuary cities in the People's Leftist Republic is that the ordinary people aren't welcome there either. You're welcome to watch on TV, though, if you just keep your mouth shut. Now, this story comes primarily from the alternative side of the web, places like Breitbart, but you can find it on Variety, too, if you're willing to read between the lines. Here we go. Anti-gun Hollywood celebrities enjoyed all kinds of high-level protection that you peons, of course, aren't entitled to, as they stood behind barricades. I guess they don't like the term walls. Along with their armed guards, LAPD officers, numerous security checkpoints, and even bomb-sniffing dogs, as they arrived on the red carpet for the 2019 Golden Globes Sunday evening. Said an L.A. law enforcement official to Deadline, quote, "Our plan is to have eyes everywhere and shut down any possible disturbance that could arise long before it gets anywhere near the venue or the event." Let me put that in plain English for you, folks. You're not going to see any media coverage of immigrant women pulling their children along towards a danger zone and trying to climb those border walls. But I'm guessing they'll keep the MAGA hats even further out of sight. Variety says the story previewed the heightened level of security expected around the Beverly Hilton, the venue for Sunday night's star-studded ceremony, by noting that the days of being able, you peons anyway, to park on the street, walk up, and get inside may be long gone. They report that, quote, "the city of Beverly Hills has cracked down on allowing crowds near the building." I guess that goes especially for deplorables. And while the Beverly Hills PD wouldn't go into details or specificity on their security plans, they made clear they would be using, quote, "additional staff and security measures to ensure a safe and secure site for the hoi polloi, utilizing the latest technology and best practices for high-profile events," unquote. Unless you think the hypocrisy ends there, Beverly Hills Public Information Manager Keith Sterling made it clear that federal agencies, too, would be involved in the security. No shutdown there. But it does kind of give you another insight into what the critical functions of the federal government really still are. No, folks, I doubt you'll see the actual budget numbers, nor how many miles of different kinds of walls could have been built for the same money. But I do like the Breitbart summary by A.W.R. Hawkins here, when all is said and done. After the good guys with guns keep Hollywood's upper crust safe at the Beverly Hilton, the celebrities can all go back home and wake up Monday morning to resume pushing more gun control for all you peons. And I bet more than a few of them will probably continue to be clueless enough to tell you why walls just don't work. And shouldn't be built anyway, at least not for the wrong kind of people. So let's continue the theme. This next story would be downright funny if it wasn't so tragic, but at least it's basically good news. The now chairman and Democrat, of course, of the House Armed Services Committee has admitted that President Trump really does have the authority, whether they like it or not, to have the military build that southern border wall. When asked on ABC's This Week by George Stephanopoulos whether the president does, quote, "have the ability, have the authority to declare a national emergency and have the military build his wall," the Congress critter answered, quote, "well, unfortunately, the short answer is yes. There is a provision in the law that says the president can declare an emergency. It's been done a number of times, but primarily it's been done to build facilities in Afghanistan and Iraq." I'm going to pause right there, folks. How the heck does an emergency in Afghanistan or Iraq outweigh anything that might be happening in America? Well, only in America with a K. Back to the quote. "Yes, it's been done a number of times," he admitted, "but it's primarily been done to build facilities anywhere else in the world but here, like Afghanistan and Iraq. And," he said, "in this case, I think the president would be wide open to a court challenge saying, where's the emergency?" Unquote. Now, for those of you that aren't already choking on that, in other words, anybody that hasn't been public school dumbed down and knows what's really been going on for over 85 years at this point, there has been a continuing state of emergency in the United States, the formerly free United States, since 1933, and almost all of them a whole lot more bogus than an actual invasion from the South. But just to bring that point home, let's go to the left's preferred so-called news source, the Criminally Negligent Network, which told us in a story dated August 15th, 2017, over a year ago, that there are no less than 28 active national emergencies still in progress at a theater near you. They were bemoaning then the fact that the Trump administration isn't going to add the opioid crisis to that list. But how dare he think about an invasion meriting inclusion? The story says, states of emergency are nothing new for the United States. There are currently 28 concurrent active national emergencies in America. There's been at least one national emergency for nearly four decades straight, and usually, of course, a whole lot more than one. The president with the most aliases declared a dozen. George W. Bush beat that record by one, and nearly all of those are still active today. The undisputed rapist champion president was also the champion emergency declarer with 17, and this story doesn't even go all the way back to the original FDR-era declarations of emergency. No surprise they'd very much rather not talk about that. Instead, they choose to just focus on the National Emergencies Act of 1974 during Jimmy Carter's Iran hostage crisis. And would you like to take a guess at the predominant theme of most of those national emergencies? Sick? If you can say blocking property, you're probably on the right track. We got national emergency after national emergency blocking the property of certain persons from literally just about everywhere, except maybe Hollywood. From Zimbabwe, Sudan, Cuba, the Western Balkans, Belarus, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, North Korea, Lebanon, Yemen, the Ukraine, South Sudan, and of course, Venezuela and Burundi. And no, folks, I don't hear Congress traitors squawking, "Where's the emergency?" in pretty much any of those. The rest of the story goes on to bemoan, though, that the opioid crisis will not technically be added to the list because the White House has determined it's more appropriately deemed a public health emergency. Yeah, we got a million ways to get around the Constitution now. Kind of makes you wonder if the communist left would whine less about what's going on at the southern border if the Trump administration declared the invasion by disease-ridden people carrying everything from chikungunya and dengue fever to virulent strains of tuberculosis, something different than the kind that reminds people of the national security failures that are being so overlooked by the witch hunts in Washington. Now, at this point, I guess it's prudent to continue that issue as well, because a lot of people, including your host, have been warning for decades now about the obvious dangers of allowing the executive branch to, well, stroke of the pen, law of the land, circumvent the entire Constitution with that mere stroke of the pen. But it's been going on for decade after decade now, and with the exception of some statesmen with integrity, like Dr. Ron Paul, and the usual Constitution and liberty-oriented types, who of course get demonized with labels like conspiracy theorists for even knowing what the law actually once said, as long as presidents were using that power to subvert the Constitution and undermine the rule of law, Big Brother's minions were just fine with it. There were, to be fair, at least a few principled leftists who have warned likewise that eventually there might very well be a conservative president in office, or at least one that doesn't share the deep state goals, who would tend to undo some of the things these emergencies have been used to do, but they too quickly became persona non grata. Obviously now, though, folks, it's a whole new kettle of fish. How dare the president think he could use an emergency to actually defend the United States against enemies foreign and domestic, rather than surveil, censor, sanction, grope, and disarm the formerly free peons? Just who does this guy think he is? William Cummings and John Fritzie at USA Today weigh in on it in an article that's about as close to objective as they seem to get. President Trump, they say, or admit, could declare an immigration emergency, but would that get him the funds for a wall? Oh, and here, folks, I do have to hearken back to all of those other emergencies about blocking or seizing assets of certain persons. Is it just beginning to emerge through a glass darkly what some of those criminal persons in the United States might really be worried about as they pontificate behind their well-guarded walls? We're working up to that. But, says USA Today, as the partial, yeah, that's putting it mildly, government shutdown enters its third week, anybody notice yet? The White House is exploring other options to secure funding for the construction of that border wall with Mexico, including using the president's emergency powers to circumvent Congress altogether. Well, you'd think by now they'd be used to that anyway. Said the president on Friday, quote, "We can call a national emergency and build it very quickly. But if we can do it through a negotiated process, we're giving that a shot." Unquote. As the new and acting White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, noted on the Clinton News Network's State of the Union on Sunday, presidents do have the authority to defend the nation. So, can he do that? They ask. And for this purpose, they quote Kim Lane Shepley, a professor at Princeton University's Center for Human Values, who said Trump can surely test whether he has the power to declare a national emergency for this purpose. No one else has ever been tested and found wanting, it would seem, but she's not going to point that out. The National Emergencies Act, though, she admits, allows him to declare a state of emergency without approval from anyone else, unquote. And under that 1976 law, the president must cite the specific emergency powers he's activating under existing statutes. You notice, folks, that people have talked for years about requiring presidents and or Congress to cite the Constitution and the powers that give them the ability to do whatever unconstitutional thing they've been doing. No worry on that score. The Congressional Research Service, though, says there are literally hundreds of, quote, provisions of federal law delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. In other words, any time and every time, unless it's that guy now in the White House. The authors cite a 2007 report from that same Congressional Research Service noting that, quote, under the powers delegated, no, not by the Constitution, but by such statutes, the president may, and buckle up for this one, seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a variety of ways, control the lives of United States citizens, unquote. And up until just lately, folks, let me say it again, if you were even to quote studies like that one or various executive orders asserting same, you would, of course, be called a conspiracy theorist. Congress, the story goes on to admit, can terminate a declared emergency, but it requires a joint resolution, in other words, a very high hurdle. And Democrats, now in power in the House, would have to convince Senate Republicans, who still, for now, control that chamber, to join them in blocking a move by the president that they so love to hate. Then they'd have to get a signature from that same president, the guy who declared the emergency in the first place, or more likely, override his veto. Yeah, if you live by the almighty pen, you die by the almighty pen. At least up until this guy got a hold of it. So the question becomes, is this guy even remotely as creative as all the lawbreakers who knew what the meaning of is in the past to come up with an emergency power out there somewhere that allows him to do precisely what presidents have said, yeah, we can do with impunity anyway? Well, among others, the president could declare an immigration emergency under the Immigration and Nationality Act. That would be defined as an influx of aliens, which is either of such magnitude or exhibits such other characteristics that effective administration of the immigration laws of the United States is beyond the existing capabilities, unquote, of immigration authorities in the affected area or areas. All I can add to that is, duh. Oh, and in case you missed it, there's yet another migrant caravan coming up from south of Mexico. At least 15,000 or so expected on this one. And that's not counting the hundreds or thousands a day that are already sweeping over the borders. If there's one thing that's been made clear here over the last few months, though, it's that facts and law, neither one of them, have anything to do with what's being pushed by the swamp critters. To the extent that much of the rest of the arguments in this story about whether an immigration emergency exists or not are downright inane. But here, nevertheless, is where it does get really funny. The final segment in the piece is, what do Democratic lawmakers think? To which your host simply retorts, who cares? And that's the twisted, y'all had it coming beauty of it. When it comes to stupidity on parade, with the obvious exception of the new Queen Prince of Vacuity, Sandy Ocasio-Cortez, It's tough to top the intellectual clueless cowpile from California, Adam Schiff for brains, who actually said that when it comes to Trump's invocation of emergency powers, his, quote, really threatening talk was something he also, quote, doesn't have the power to execute. Now, listen to this, folks, and I'll try to see if I can get through it. Quote, if Harry Truman couldn't nationalize the steel industry during wartime, this president doesn't have the power to declare an emergency and build a multi-billion-dollar wall on the border, unquote. Well, you know what, folks? I guess you could say that was then and this is now. Once upon a time, Congress actually had to declare war. Imagine that. They abdicated that power a long time ago, along with all of those other emergency powers to circumvent the rule of law. And that was clearly before we were a way over the top, so far gone communist nation. You know darn well by now that if Hitler was wielding that imperial pen instead, and Big Brother wanted to seize everybody's, I don't know, private information, laptops, and other stuff at airports, or even steel mills, it'd be a whole different story. Which leads me next down a path that you regular listeners know I've consistently warned about. We ought to be very uncomfortable about it. But of course, we should have been uncomfortable about presidents violating the law, gang raping the Constitution, and claiming the authority to legislate for anybody, anywhere, in all cases whatsoever, a long time ago. The incredible irony here on the other side of the coin is that for once, we might actually have a president who's looking to turn back the invasion and complete destruction of the formerly free republics rather than expedite it. No one of the deep state swamp critters are squealing like stuck pigs. But let's make it clear, that doesn't mean for a second we should trust this kind of power being wielded by anybody, anytime. It's what the Constitution, back when we had one, was supposed to be a bulwark against. But here we are. Mike Adams, therefore, of Natural News, says it's time. President Trump should declare a national emergency, build that border wall, activate the military police, and he's just getting rolling, and arrest the deep state traitors. And at this point, I'll quote him. It's time to activate the military police and hand them a list of the deep state traitors who have attempted to carry out a treasonous political coup rooted in illegal government spying under Barry Sabarco, a.k.a. President Bathhouse Barry, the falsification of so-called evidence used to deceive the FISA court, which is unconstitutional anyway, witness tampering by Robert Mueller, illegal leaks by the whoremeister himself, James Comey, official corruption by Hillary Clinton, and, of course, multiple acts of treason against America approved by Obama and dutifully carried out by the likes of Eric Fast and Furious Holder and Loretta Lynch Mob. Arrest, he says, the deep state traitors, indict them for crimes against America, and prosecute them. In other words, either defend America or we lose America, if indeed it's not already too late. But he's just getting rolling. The journo terrorists who continue to try to foment race wars, Antifa violence, and border invasions by foreign nationals must be named, arrested, and prosecuted. Governors who sign so-called sanctuary state laws must also be arrested and tried for aiding and abetting treason and criminal felons. Tech companies like Gulag and Two Facebook that engaged in coordinated conspiracy to censor conservative, libertarian, and constitutional speech and steal the 2018 midterm elections must be halted, dismantled, and criminally prosecuted. It's time, he said, to release the classified documents that prove Robert Mueller is the criminal he is, an operative working for the Clinton cartel. The documents must be unredacted, and any person in the FBI, DOJ, or State Department that refuses to cooperate with the full release of those unredacted documents should be immediately arrested by military police and charged with acts of sedition. America, he believes, can survive the treachery and treason now being directed against it, but only if those who love this country take decisive action, and I will add, and soon, because if it's not already too late, time is certainly running out, to identify and halt the traitors who are deliberately sabotaging our republic from within. Those traitors, of course, exist throughout the deep state swamp, the anti-American news networks, public universities, and government regulators. All the evidence needed to arrest and prosecute these traitors, he notes correctly, already exists. The exhaustive evidence of a massive deep state criminal conspiracy operating within the U.S. government has been covered up by the likes of Rod Rosenstein, buried by Obama, and ignored by do-nothing Jeff Sessions. Establishment Republican traitors like the late John McCain, Menachemo, attempted to aid the deep state in overthrowing the Trump presidency by ferreting false intelligence to mislead the FISA court. CIA operatives pretending to be journalists, like Anderson Cooper, anyone, helped carry out a public disinformation campaign to mislead the American public and create an utterly false narrative of so-called Russia collusion, where none existed, unless, of course, you're counting the Hitlery campaign, Uranium One, and that kind of treason. Thousands of operatives throughout government, he continues, the intelligence community and the fake news media are guilty of a conspiracy to overthrow the American form of government. Mike gets this wrong. It was never a democracy, folks. That's part of the lie. Far too few people know it. But no doubt, he's right here, enough overwhelming evidence already exists to out them and prosecute them. John Solomon at the Hill knows everything and can point investigators in the right direction. It goes without saying, folks, that he and others like him had really better watch their backs. There are folks like Dan Bongino, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, and Alex Jones who have been right all along. There really is a war being waged against America from within, and it's time America activated its own immune system against these traitors. Because if no defense is mounted against this insidious treason from within, America will fall rapidly to the likes of the nutcase from New York, Ocasio-Cortez, and her communist cohorts, who aren't even hiding their motivations anymore. They wish to sweep out every last vestige of the old republic and replace it with a radical left-wing authoritarian regime where all constitutional rights still remaining are utterly null and void. And furthermore, and here there is no denying it at this point, if the deep state traitors aren't outed and arrested soon, the bloody civil war long planned will be utterly unavoidable. And he's not happy with socialist media either. It's time, continues Mike Adams, to dismantle the criminally run tech giants. These evil anti-American corporate enemies, he continues, that answer to communist China must be occupied and disassembled, server by server, cubicle by cubicle. Because their continued existence poses the greatest threat to the First Amendment that our nation has ever endured. The CEOs of Gulag, to Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Apple, and other pro-censorship tech giants need to be arrested and charged with violating the civil rights of hundreds of millions of Americans as part of a coordinated conspiracy to enable nationwide election fraud through selective censorship. Now, there be a minefield here, of course. But as your host has pointed out for longer than I can certainly recount, that's the issue. It's always the issue, and it's by design when it comes to public-private partnerships. Because, you see, restrictions like the First Amendment don't apply to private entities, and we already know you're not allowed to be private if you're politically incorrect. But that's the beauty of being a public-private partner now, isn't it? A fascist entity, in other words. You can have the public cake, the private cake, and eat everyone else's cake, too. But he's right, though, to the extent that these truly are cartels, engaged in criminal mob-type control that, if we had something like RICO statutes, should have been employed here a long time ago. Nor does Mike Adams forget the Congress traitors that have been the focus of much ire on the part of your hosts since last week's most egregious examples. It's time to arrest those members of Congress, he said, who willfully violated their oaths or even lied about them and put their hand on a bogus book to protect and defend the United States Constitution. Those, he says, who've openly and repeatedly violated that Constitution ought to be forcefully removed from office by military police charged with sedition and treason, because, folks, that's exactly what it means to make war against the American people, and prosecuted under military law. That, he says, obviously includes every member of Congress who have voted to disarm the American populace and establish a monopoly of firepower in the hands of a corrupt deep state swamp government, just like we've seen in Venezuela, following the California plan. It's time, concludes Mike Adams, for the president to declare that national emergency, and it's a broad one, and call on all of those who ever took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and meant it to remember what that means and to prepare for what's been so long coming.